great future. We're talking real money.
Think back. If you're able, think back to when you were a child. Think back and try to remember how much money you thought it would take to be filthy rich. What's the number? Remember the number? I kind of remember the number.
That's easy. I could tell you the number.
It's $1 million.
A million. Everybody always said, hey, you got $1 million. And by the way, a lot of people today still say, hey, you got $1 million. Anyway.
But for me, it wasn't even a million because I came from a very poor family. Mm. And I'm going, like, if I can have $100,000, I can make it. I'm going to be great. I'm going to be set for life. Now, with a million today, you can still live, but that's really about the extent of it. You're going to live. How much money does it take today to be rich? To be rich, where you feel like I never have to think about money again. What's the number, Tom?
Well, the number is not what this survey just found.
That's what I'm saying. What did the survey find?
All right. Welcome to Talking Real Money. I'm Tom. Oh. That's Don over there, just in case you're wondering. And you're out there listening.
I got to tell you. This is the podcast.
Yeah.
So they actually had to go to talkingrealmoney.com
or to have a good idea of what this is.
Where it says Talking Real Money with
Tom
and Don.
Okay. Okay. Fine enough.
It's not like radio where we have to introduce ourselves.
And even radio, I don't think they do a very good job. Okay. Survey came out.
He's not opinionated, is he?
Surveyed 1,000 Americans ages 21 to 75. Well, that's their first problem. Never trust anybody under, 30 or 40. At any rate,
they say, wait. I thought they said don't trust anyone over 40.
Well, they got that mixed up, but we can fix that right away. So they surveyed people and they asked them, can you put a dollar amount on what it means to be wealthy in the United States? And the magic number is...
I'm dying
to hear. $2.2 million. $2.2 million. With that, you're wealthy.
Only a little over twice as much as a million.
Yeah, which if you go back to where we're thinking about a million in the 1960s, it would be way more. $1 million then be way more than 2.2 today. Way more. But they don't really say, by the way, what. So maybe you could help me with that. When you say wealthy, what does that mean, really? I mean, is that you suggest you don't have to work again? I don't know.
No, to me, it means you don't have to worry about money at all. You have no reason whatsoever to ever really even think about it. You have enough money for everything, for anything you should choose to do practically. And for me, I don't think that that number is reached until you're into certainly not seven figures. It's got to be eight or nine.
Before you get to that kind of number. But number one, it always depends on how much you spend.
Don't even have to think about what you spend. You just get to go, okay, you know what? I want to fly in a private jet everywhere I go.
That's Jeff Bezos kind of money. Yeah.
No, well, that's more billions.
Yeah, I get it.
There are millionaires flying private.
I think you're right. I think that's more like 10 billion, 10 million and up. To really be
status,
like,
and even 10, I think you got to get closer to 100
to really live that way.
Yeah.
So this survey, I mean, what I hate about this is people read this and think, I got to have $2 million or I can't be okay.
Rich,
which is so not true. There isn't a number. And Americans have this horrible thing. It's one of our worst traits is I got to have more. I mean, we've all felt it, right? We look across the fence at our neighbor and they're doing something. And you're like, well, why can't I do my neighbor, by the way, who has replaced my bad neighbor. I haven't heard no leaf blowers yet, which is good, but he gets like 3 deliveries a day. And I think, what am I missing? Anyway, I mean, so we all have this tendency to think that we need more and it's ridiculous. You don't need $2 million.
You might need $2 million.
Well, it depends, of course, how much you're spending.
$2 million. Yeah, right. That's the thing. There is no, and this is something that a lot of listeners, a lot of clients, a lot of people we talk to go, what's the number? How much do I need? Well, that's not an easy answer to provide without knowing what you need from the money. Well, how much income do you need, and how much risk can you take to get it?
I think those are two key things. I mean, here's the problem I have with this whole discussion in general, is here's what I see happening, like really happening. What happens is when people either hear the number or they see their neighbor or they read something about somebody getting rich with meme stocks or SPACs, whatever it is, they think, I got to have some, I want to be in on that. I'm missing it. So, and we saw this with a few people that we know late last year that were using, just index funds and making plenty of money. But they looked around and said, but if I had my money in Amazon, or if I had my money in Tesla, or if I had my money in Apple or Microsoft, look how much more I would have made. And this is serious. They actually took some of their money from those index funds and put it into those tech stocks. And what happened? Those places have gotten beat up, hammered, bashed down. So it does create bad habits. That's what I worry about when I hear these numbers.
It creates bad behavior.
Yeah.
It just creates bad behavior. And that's the real problem, is that this FOMO, this keeping up with the Joneses concept, it's why people got into crypto. It's why people got into the ARK Innovation Fund. All this money comes pouring in after things have done well, not before. You didn't know ARK Innovation was going to go up by triple digits before it did. You did not know that. I guarantee none of you did. It was only a couple of people who even got into the thing early on. It was only later, after it had posted those big gains, that the money came pouring in to the tune of billions of dollars from thousands of investors. So as to the point of what does it take to be rich? Well, one, should that really be your goal?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think if you go back, for example, to the movie Wall Street, at one point, the protagonist asked Gordon Gekko, how much is enough, Gordon? How many boats? How many planes? How many whatever? Everybody has to come up with what their lifestyle should be, what they want it to be, and then settle for that. I guess that's the part that I struggle with. Even people who have a lot of money oftentimes are like, how can I make more? And greed will get you in trouble. No, Gordon Gekko aside, no question about it.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, you're not going to invest your way to Bezos type or Musk type or Gates type wealth. You are not going to invest yourself into that kind of wealth, because you can't do it. You would have to take a flyer and get really lucky. Well, you could win the lottery then too. You could. You could win an $80 million, $100 million, $200 million lottery. You could. Do you actually plan your life around the winning of a multi-million dollar lottery?
No, you don't.
But people plan their lives around trying to invest their way to wealth, which isn't going to happen. Do you have any idea how all these people got rich?
Which ones are you talking about now?
Bezos, Musk,
yeah,
Gates.
They had an idea, but they worked like the devil to make it happen. No question. They were smart about it, but they made it. So again, going back to where we started about, is $2.2 million enough? No idea, because we don't know anything about your life. Is that meaningful to you? No, it's not meaningful to you. There isn't a number.
Right.
Even
Let's
a withdrawal
give them something
rate,
that's
not
meaningful to them, though. Let's give them something that is meaningful, not the number, but how to arrive at your number, because everybody has a number they should probably shoot for.
And I've heard Larry Swedrow say it should be 25 times your salary.
Yeah, but again, that's what the right way to do it is to figure out what it costs you to live today, and then add a rate of inflation to that. That is typical, a 3% maybe. Want to be a little bit more conservative? Add 4% per year. Extrapolate that out a few years. That's probably the amount you need. What are your bare bones expenses? Then say, but I want to live a little over bare bones. So this is what I'm shooting for. And what can you expect from your portfolio? Well, it depends. Again, every single thing we talk about on this program depends on you. There isn't a right number for everybody. It's how long do you think you're going to live?
Nobody knows that. And so therefore the withdrawal rate is worthless. But I will say this, I will add to what you just said. And that is, we do know the people who are more successful with whatever number they have or don't have, they have a plan and they have a discipline. And once that's in place, they're pretty implacable. And then they also don't move around when bad things happen in the market. All the rest of that stuff is, that doesn't matter to me. I may pay attention to it, but it doesn't affect my financial decision. So I'm going to tag on with what you said and say, yeah, once you have that document in place and you have a discipline to follow it, then it doesn't matter if the Joneses have 3 million or 4 million, whatever it is, you've got what you need to make it work for the long haul.
And then it really boils down to one last thing. Having the discipline, we all think we have the discipline. It's knowing, absolutely knowing, with total certainty that you will never let your emotions control your financial decisions, ever. If you can't do that, if you know you can't and you're being totally honest with yourself, be honest with yourself. Why lie to is there any big benefit in lying to yourself?
Nope. Not
that I'm aware of. Maybe benefits in lying to other people, but don't lie to yourself. If you've done all that and you go, I know me. I'm going to wait right now because the market is down. Not has been, but it's down. I'm going to wait. Or boy, when that market goes up, I'm going to start buying like crazy. Or once it's up, I'm going to buy. If you're one of those people, you got to get some help. And I'm not talking, I'm talking kind of psychiatric, because that's what a good advisor acts some ways.
Exactly.
They act as a fiscal and emotional counselor. Good ones do that.
Yeah, they do. They don't just build a plan. They don't just put together a portfolio and say, see you later. They're there when you do go through the ups and the downs, as we've seen this year. And they help you stay on those tracks, stay on the course. So I think that's exactly right, Don.
And we have questions that you asked us to answer sitting here in our little inbox at talkingrealmoney.com.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many, many of them. We still have probably 10 or 12 to get through, maybe more. I lose track. So, and this one dovetails nicely into our conversation needing advice.
Bring on the doves.
I have been listening to your show for years now and love the podcast. My question is about a financial advisor. Could you recommend one in Alaska, Anchorage, more specific? My wife and I need to get all our different retirement accounts in line as our family is getting older. Me, 45, wife, 43, 3 kids, 11, 4, 3. Also, someone to help my mother-in-law, as I found out she uses Wells Fargo.
You know, I'd love to send my mother-in-law to Wells Fargo if I had the opportunity. I'd be all over that.
You put her on the Wells Fargo wagon.
Don't they have those stage coaches?
Wells Fargo wagon.
Yeah, okay. Central California somewhere.
Yeah, what's that from?
Blazing
the Music Man.
110-degree heat. Yeah. If you can find the stage couch, I can get my mother-in-law there, no doubt.
All right. Can we answer the question seriously
in Alaska. So, I mean, getting old at 45, wasn't there an old and a 45?
Older. He said older.
Yeah, okay.
Even remember older. At 45, you felt all like grown up.
I had no idea I'd feel this bad.
You had no idea.
Nearly 20 years older than that. First of all, if you want someone in Alaska, the best I could do would be to go use our dimensional funds method, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You simply go to, I think it's dfaus.com, and I believe you type in your zip code.
It's really hard to find it, though. They've gone out of their way, and I've talked to them about this. For some reason, they feel compelled. All right, my trackpad just disconnected. For some reason, they feel compelled to do page upon page upon page of other stuff where the search and advisor button is the last one. I told him this was a bad idea if you're trying to help. It's actually dfaus.com.
That's what I said.
US.com. Yeah, I just want to make sure I have that.
Dfaus.com.
DFAUS. Yes. And what you there have to do is you have to, in the middle of the page, there are these little dots. You go click one dot, click two dots. It's on the fifth dot.
I'm on the phone version of this, and I'm not seeing any dots. And I'm pretty good at collecting.
Well, you got to go down to the gray section.
Dot.
Go to the gray section, and the final dot down there is find an advisor near you.
All right. So what? All you
now,
do then
I don't
is enter.
Know what the zip
oh, here
code
we go.
Is.
No, it's actually on the mobile version. It's like this. Oh, it just it went away. It was. Oh, I see the dots. Got it now. Okay.
You see the dots?
Yeah. Oh, God's sakes. Okay. Yeah. It's hard, but you can do it. So you go to dfaus.com, and then you simply enter your zip code. And they'll hook you up with three people in your area. We trust them.
Well, they'll give
DFA
you the names.
Ethical. Correct.
I went and looked one up.
In Alaska?
One in Alaska. Well, and it was actually pretty nice. Pretty nice. The it's called Bright Road Wealth. I read their form ADV. That's all I did. But it's nice in that their maximum fee is 1% per year.
I like that.
And I do believe that they are DFA advisors. They're in Anchorage, and so you might at least want to talk to them. But here's a little bit of advice over and above that. Do not take our word for it. Do not take anyone's word for it. Okay? This is critical. Go to talkingrealmoney.com/help and learn how to vet advisors. We teach you how to do it. We give you the tools you need to do it. We give you a form that any 100% fiduciary worth his or her salt would gladly fill out and sign. It's only the bad ones that will refuse. It's the best way of all to find one that's likely not to be working in your best interests all the time. Use the form. I know it's uncomfortable, but what you need to do is say, you know, this is a business relationship I am getting ready to enter into or might enter into with you here. I need to know you, just like I guess, I hope you need to know me before we do a darn thing. So can you fill this short form out for me? Take your time.
Then we'll
come back and talk.
And sign what? It. By the way, I'd be curious to know if you called an advisory firm in Alaska, if you got a chilly reception.
Which one of you was it out there who said he could continue to make his puns? Which one of you? Step forward, please. Take responsibility for your actions.
We have a cliff. You will be flying off the side of it. Sorry. Okay, we've got time for one more. Is that it?
Do you want one more?
Absolutely.
I can do one
I'm
more.
Kind
this
of on
will
a
be
roll,
fun
as they say.
For
yeah.
you.
Okay.
My wife and I invested with Edward Jones about 3 years ago. Based on information from your podcast, we finally decided to move to Vanguard. And I've been speaking with an advisor there. We have two IRAs, one taxable account. After speaking with the advisor, a plan was drafted that consisted of, they talked to a Vanguard advisor. Guess what the portfolio allocation is, Tom?
Let me think. Some Vanguard funds?
No, don't. Just the allocation. Oh. Just the stock bond allocation. What would you guess the number is?
60-40?
60-40! The man wins another Cupid
Thank
doll.
You. Yeah.
This mirrors what we had at Edward Jones. My question involves the allocation between the three accounts. We're using four of their ETFs. BND,
yeah.
BNDX, VTI, and VXUS. They recommend that my wife's IRA consist only of BND and BNDX,
okay.
My IRA, VXUS, and BNDX. The taxable account will be solely VTI. We'll both be 70 in August. We have good pensions and do not need to use these funds for the foreseeable future. It appears we'll have at least 72 before RMDs. What would be the reasoning behind this allocation?
Okay, now I'm not... BNDX, that's international bonds. Is that what that is?
I believe it is.
Okay. Total international bonds.
Yeah,
okay.
It's total
so just a step back before we get into the port, where to own specific things.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, no offense, because Vanguard's a very fine, fun family.
Fun family. Yes. I was going to stop there
yeah.
too.
Their
advisory
other,
business is questionable yeah, at times.
It is because this portfolio, frankly, if you were like 25 and you're just getting going, sure. But if you're going to hire someone to manage the money, this is not as sophisticated as I would like to see.
Oh, exactly. There's no small cap. There's no value.
There's nothing. Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing.
This is. We give you this basically this portfolio free at talkingrealmoney.com because it's like here you go do this. You don't need to pay them. What I guess is going to be 30 basis points.
Why?
international bonds in your taxable account? That doesn't make sense.
No. BNDX should only be in the IRAs. Why the his wife's IRA in BND and BNDX only, his VXUS and BNDX?
I can see the having bonds in a qualified account. That makes sense, right? The interest then doesn't matter. If it's in a taxable account, then yes, you're going to pay tax on that. So you don't want to do that. I think that makes sense. And again, I'm not sure if I'm familiar with the – was that another bond fund, the VS?
No, VXUS, that's the Vanguard Total International. Here's what they're doing, Tom. They're using the Vanguard Total International and the Vanguard Total US, as opposed to using VT, which is the Vanguard Total World.
Right. Again, this is no offense. This is very simple for somebody who's actually being paid to manage the money. Mm-hmm. You know, oftentimes we see portfolios with 40 funds, which I think is too much. I'd like to see less than half of that. But again, this is, I don't think you should be paying them for this kind of work. No offense to them.
No, seriously. Really? I mean, seriously? This is all the advice they give for their half a basis point?
It's 30 basis points.
30 basis points.
Yeah, something
whatever
like that.
It is. It's just, I mean, here's, if I was doing this, and you just, we're going to keep it this simple. I'm not 100% sold on BNDX, by the way. Just
me either.
Tell you. I don't know.
It would make a small part of the bond portfolio.
It would have to be tiny. But I'm just saying for the let's keep it simple, stupid portfolio.
Yeah.
That we use BND and VTI and fire the advisor.
Yes. And again, if someone's
managing.
I'm serious.
BND and VTI and fire the advisor.
And if somebody's managing this
not
for
VTI,
you.
Not VT, VT, VT. Not VTI. So
a
VT.
Global stock fund and the bond. Again, if someone's managing this for you, I would ask them. It'd be very simple. What is my commitment to U.S. small cap? What is my commitment to U.S. small cap value? What is my commitment to U.S. large cap value?
See, this is the problem,
what is my international,
Tom.
I mean, the exposure to those. They're going to say they have that exposure, and I'm going to say it's going to be so tiny.
No.
It's not going to be meaningful.
They don't believe in the same research that we believe, even though it's pretty solid research.
To me, you don't even need to believe in that. You just need to say, I want to be spread out among various asset classes, because in that portfolio, uh-huh. What do you own? You own the things, by the way, that have gotten beat up big this year because it's mainly giant or large U.S. companies. That's what you hold. Those have been pounded down more than anything else this year. So again, and they got you've been the one pointed out from 2000 through 2009. They were the ones that got pounded down. If you were more diversified, you did much better. So again, I just don't think it's a very good portfolio.
And here's what I would probably do. I would take seriously. Again, my inclination would be one, fire the advisor. Just say, guys, okay, we're just going to manage this on our own. We don't need to pay you extra. Why pay
that?
You're not going to get anything. You didn't get anything for it. And then here's an idea: just put all your money in all your accounts in the Vanguard Target Date 2025 or 2030 fund.
Okay, I'm going to argue with you there. I would not ever hold the target date fund in a taxable account anymore after what Vanguard did in 2021.
Because of what happened.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm okay in retirement accounts, but not there.
So, all right.
Period.
So put the Vanguard Target Retirement 2025 in your IRAs. Put Vanguard 2020. Oh, because it's more conservative. It's a 40-60. So put the Vanguard 2020 in your IRAs, both of them, and go with VT in your non-IRAs.
The 2020, something by like the that. Way, I believe you can check a box and they will never have less than 50% of the money in stocks. They give you the option of either going down to.
Well, it's already 2020 is already 40,
is, okay.
60.
Wow. Yeah. And that's, again, even that I would argue with because, weighted to so
it.
Many bonds. Wow.
No, you're not, though, because you've got the VT in your taxable account.
No, okay, I'm talking about with that specific target date fund.
But I'm saying you're using that fund to overweight bonds in the IRAs.
I got it.
And you're overweighting stocks outside.
I'm saying as a general rule of thumb for anybody who has a reasonable amount of risk tolerance, I just think getting south of having 50% of your money in stocks.
But the overall portfolio in that case is going to be somewhere closer to 60-40.
Fair enough. Again, I go back to your previous advice. I think you should fire the advisor.
BND and VT.
Yeah, I don't know that Vanguard should be managing money this way because it always ends up being Vanguard products. The portfolios I see are oversimplified and ignore academic work that shows you really need to own other things. My take, but this is not a good place.
Okay, then. I think we're in semi-agreement.
Closing.
We're on the semi-same page. We're on a pseudo-same page.
I'm hoping it's not the semi that's coming this way, too. Got it. Okay.
Oh, I knew you could sneak one more in before it was over.
Yeah.
We're done.
That's
we're
it?
We're done.
Okay.
We're done.
Yeah.
We're done. This is the podcast. It's over. It's done with. By the way, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast service. Please. Share it on social media. Tell your friends. Leave a review at Apple Podcasts. That's the best place. Very few other podcast sites allow reviews. So we really appreciate those. If you need help, if you need real help, and by the way, we do mean real help. We're not talking about some veiled sales pitch. If you need real help, go to vestry.com, set up an appointment with one of our Vestry by Appella advisors. They're not going to charge anything for a meeting. They're going to actually provide you advice. They're going to say, you probably need to get rid of this garbage and go this way. But they're not going to pitch anything.
And if you
have something, I could tell you want to say something.
Well, I just wanted to mention, if you have 5 hours and 17 minutes over this upcoming holiday weekend that you're looking to fill.
Yeah.
Retire me 2022.
You know, for that Memorial Day barbecue. Wait, no, for that Memorial Day barbecue. No.
Actually, that's a great
idea. Set up the big screen on the back porch and show everybody. Have a retire meat Memorial Day party.
The in-laws will be gone. There'll be marks out your driveway. Oh, right up. What? They were showing a financial thing. Come on.
It'll just be you and your bottle of bourbon. That's the way life should be.
And maybe an overcooked steak. Nothing wrong with any of that.
Bottle of bourbon. All right, we're done. We're leaving.
Okay. All right.
All right. Say goodbye, Tom.
Bye, Tom.
I'm done. That's Tom talking real money.
We hope you realize that the information provided on Talking Real Money is for informational, educational, and hopefully enjoyable purposes only. Providing personalized financial planning or investing advice takes time, so please consult with a really good fee-only fiduciary investment, tax, or legal advisor. We know a good one. Investing must always involve risk. In other words, you can and probably will lose money at times. Also, as much as you want it, no one can accurately and consistently predict the future. So past performance doesn't tell you a darn thing about what the future will bring. Unlike many other programs that say something similar, Talking Real Money is not trying to get you to buy or sell any financial products or securities. Instead, the program is provided as a public service by Appella Capital, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Thanks for listening, and please visit TalkingRealMoney.com for more information and disclosures. Are we done now?